Welcome to Brighteon Broadcast News for Monday, December 18th, 2023. And also a Merry Christmas to all of you listening who do celebrate Christmas. It's only a week away. It's coming up so quickly. Amazing. I can't believe how quickly time is going by here. I don't have a working title today, but we are focused on, well, number one, The Great Taking, which is this new documentary from David Webb. We're going to play a segment for you and talk about his disturbing revelations about, the financial system and how quickly it can all break down. But we've also got other news about, the shipping companies, the largest ones in the world, have now halted all shipments through the Red Sea, which, of course, goes through the Suez Canal. And that's because of the Houthi attacks on shipping containers, which is, of course, an offshoot of the whole Israeli war on Gaza. So we'll talk about that a little bit and what it means in terms of global supply chains. We've got a news story up on naturalnews.com about supply chain chaos that we'll talk about. And also, some scientists are now claiming that humans breathing harms the environment and that the only way to save the planet is to stop humans from breathing. And since I'm pretty sure all humans breathe when they're alive, but they don't breathe when they're dead. So, I wonder what the solution is going to be from the point of view of the globalists. Yeah, sounds like mass extermination is their goal, right? Or as they say, quote, you are the carbon they want reduced because you're a carbon-based life form and they say carbon is bad. It's not difficult to see what they're doing now. But first, I've got something special here, a little announcement to share with you. You probably know that I'm working on an AI chatbot system that will be released free to the public. It'll be an open source release currently scheduled for the end of March 2024. And it's a large language model. You'll be able to download it and run it locally on your own computer using a variety of off-the-shelf open source software, by the way. And this large language model will be specially trained in nutritional knowledge. So herbs and phytonutrients, indigenous medicine, plus also permaculture, all kinds of naturopathic modalities and complementary medicine, even traditional Chinese medicine and so on. We are currently engaged in the data curation stage of this project while we're setting up the infrastructure that we've already purchased, which is quite significant. And in the data curation stage, we are preparing materials for training the language models. And in case you're familiar with machine learning and how all this works, we are taking base layer language models, and then we're doing what's called LoRA fine-tuning, which is low-rank adaptation fine-tuning of those models in order to produce specialty models that have special knowledge, in this case, in the realm of herbs and nutrition and so on. And we haven't yet decided which base model is going to be the best to train on. We're currently trying out a lot of different base models, including Falcon and Mistral and Llama 2 and some others that are out there as well. There's also smaller models that we'll probably experiment with. And we're probably going to do training on all of them and then do some testing and see which one works the best. But the announcement I have for you here is that we're starting to curate entire books that will go into the training of these large language models. And the very first book, actually, that I prepared for this is my own book, Food Forensics. And I think this is an historic moment for the preservation of human knowledge in the realm of herbs and natural medicine and nutrition and so on. And so the books that go into this are really going to be part of the historical record of this knowledge base for humanity. So my book was actually the first, just because I actually had the manuscript handy as a file. So I converted the file through a process I'm not going to go into here, but there's a way to convert a book file into a data structure, and then the data structure is used for the fine-tuning training of the underlying language model. The second book, this is part of my announcement today, the second book that I've just received approval from the publisher, Skyhorse, the second book that's going to be used to train this model is, in fact, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s current book or his newest book called The Wuhan Cover-Up. So this book, which I mentioned last week, I covered it in an episode, it talks about the very dangerous bioweapons arms race that is currently underway across our world, and it's resulting in the creation of more deadly, you know, super weapons or bioweapons that will no doubt be used against us in the years to come. And I believe that that knowledge is critical for this large language model so that you can query it about Wuhan or Fauci or SARS-CoV-2, and you can actually get reflections of really solid knowledge in those areas, because RFK Jr. wrote quite a comprehensive book on that. It's available right now, by the way, at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or Audible.com. There's an audio version. If you want to pick up that book, it's called The Wuhan Cover-Up. But Skyhorse sent me a PDF of the entire book, and so I was able to convert that, of course, to a text file, and then using some data science analysis techniques, structure the text file into the proper format for training the language model. But the reason I'm sharing all of this with you is that we welcome your contributions to this project. If you have a book, if you're an author listening to this, or if you have transcripts or manuscripts that you think might meaningfully contribute to this project, then we would love to include your books or your text. Of course, we'll need to look at it and we'll need to make the final decision on whether we think it's appropriate to include. But I know that our audience here consists of many very well-informed people, authors, scientists, researchers, publishers, speakers, influencers, and so many more. So if you've got content that you want to help train this language model, which will be released open source, like I said, we're not making any money on it. It's not commercial. I mean, it's completely non-commercial. And you'll be able to actually build on this, by the way, if you want, after we release it, because we'll release the parameters file together with it. That's kind of what makes it open source. You'll be able to build on top of it. But if you want to contribute to this, you can email us at situationupdate@protonmail.com. And don't attach a big file, please, because large attachments don't work in email. So I would say maximum like 4 megabytes attachment, maybe 2 megabytes is better. If you have a larger file than that, then post it somewhere like Dropbox or like WeTransfer, somewhere like that, and just email us a link to where we can download the file. And the formats that we accept are Word doc files, text files, and PDFs. We don't accept PowerPoint files or anything like that. But anyway, if you want to do this, if you want to contribute to our project, go ahead, send us your file or send us a link to your file. And then in the email, just say, hey, I give you permission to use this for training the open source language model. And we will consider incorporating it into the language model. Now, let me explain how that works. Oh, but I do have to mention, Charlene Bollinger and Ty Bollinger from The Truth About Cancer, they've already started submitting some of their books for this very project. So The Truth About Cancer, some of that information is going to be included in the training of this model. Now, just so you know how this works, if you have a book, let's say, and you send me the book and you say, hey, you can use this book to help train the model, I want you to understand that the model doesn't copy your book. Okay, it doesn't make a copy of your book. It doesn't store a copy of your book. And it doesn't plagiarize your book. What it does is it reads your book. And in reading the book, it updates its own neural networks, which really is updating the relationships between words and concepts that it already knows. And so your book may be able to teach the model to relate things in a way that has not been related. For example, let's say you have a book on herbs and you have many pages talking about, I don't know, dandelion and liver health, let's say. But the language model had never encountered material that talked about linking dandelion herb to liver health. Although the model knew the term dandelion, because it's a common term in English, and it also knew about liver, the organ, and liver health and liver disease and so on, because those are obviously represented in the medical literature. But the model had never related dandelion to liver health. Well, if you send me a book on that, and then we let the model read your book, it can retrain the parameters and create stronger relationships between the dandelion herb and liver health, so that if somebody comes along and asks the model, which you'll be able to do, by the way, end of March, you'll be able to ask it, hey, what are the possible liver health benefits of dandelion? Question mark. You hit enter, and it thinks about it, and it will spit out its own understanding, its own sentences of what it thinks the relationships are between dandelion and liver health. And that answer will have been influenced by your book, you see. But the answer doesn't plagiarize your book. It doesn't cite your book. It doesn't copy your book or just regurgitate the book. It reformulates its own summary of the topic using your book and other sources of information and other, you know, language content that it has already ingested. So my point is that if you send us a book to be included in this, that book will influence the language model, but you don't have to worry. It doesn't store a copy of your book. It's kind of like the same thing where, let's say I read your book. Let's say you send me a book on, I don't know, fast motorcycles or something. And I don't know anything about fast motorcycles. So I read your book, and suddenly your book has given me an education on fast motorcycles. And then I go out and I give a 1-hour speech about fast motorcycles. And I'm using the information I read in your book, but I'm rephrasing it, I'm reformulating it, I'm adding to it based on my own knowledge base. I'm not plagiarizing your book, I'm not reading your book, I'm not performing your book in my speech. But your book influenced my knowledge about motorcycles and engines and speed and tires and brakes and Harley Davidson and Yamaha, whatever else, influenced all my knowledge on that. So now when I speak about fast motorcycles, I can speak more intelligently thanks to your book. That's kind of how the language models work as well. Anything that we use to train them influences their knowledge, but they don't make copies of the training material. Some of the other content items that are going to be used for training, by the way, include interviews and podcasts and documentary transcripts, and also quite a few books, because everybody that I ask about this wants to participate. Everybody. So we already have a lot of information coming our way because this is a community project. You know, this is, again, open source, non-commercial, non-profit project. And what else is really cool about this is that once we release our language model, again, end of March. Oh, and by the way, we will release a new one every few months. So version 1 comes out end of March, but there's going to be version 1.5 and, you know, 1.6 and version 2 and so on. This is going to continue for years to come. Okay. Then we're going to keep feeding it more and more information, get better and better training and knowledge this entire time. But even from the first day that we release our first model, you will be able to use it if you have some pretty decent knowledge about using Python as a coding language and doing machine learning and doing fine tuning. And again, you're going to use LoRA, which is the low rank adaptation, or parameter efficient fine tuning, as it's called, PEFT. You're going to use these techniques. There is a learning curve. It's not for newbies, but if you're an engineer, you'll be able to take our language model and you'll be able to build on top of it. Or you could even host it yourself. You could use it as an internal knowledge base. But if you're an end user, let's say you run a naturopathic clinic or an acupuncture clinic, and you could make this available at your clinic on a standalone laptop, let's say, where anybody can walk up to the laptop and type in questions for research, and they will get back answers from this language model. Or you could use it yourself at home. Or you could use it as a research tool for yourself to find out what you should be thinking about on certain topics. Like you might say, oh gosh, I have the following, you know, symptoms on my foot. And what could the possible causes be? Question mark. And then the language model will spit out what it thinks might be possible symptoms. Now, again, it's a research tool. It doesn't replace a doctor. It doesn't offer medical advice, but it could give you some ideas of what directions you could further look into. That's what it's designed to do. And most importantly, you no longer have to search Google. You shouldn't be using Google anyway because it's a spy machine. So you can use this language model at home, offline. You don't even need an internet connection. No one knows what you're asking it. And it will also have a lot of knowledge in a lot of different areas far beyond what we've trained it, by the way. It'll write code at a basic level. And depending on which base model we choose, it may be able to speak French, Spanish, Chinese, German, who knows how many languages it will speak. Just, again, depends on which model we choose. Some of these models can also handle images as inputs, which is pretty amazing, but that's not our focus. Our focus is knowledge on herbs and nutrients and natural medicine. So stay tuned for more information about that. And again, if you want to send us something to be included in our project, you can send it to situationupdate@protonmail.com. And just understand, we reserve the final right of whether to say yes or no to including it based on whether it's aligned with the purpose of how we're intending to use this model. But if you've got a lot of knowledge in those areas that I talked about, then go ahead, send it on, and you could help build what's really going to be the world's best knowledge base of knowledge on herbs and nutrition and natural medicine and, you know, alternative medicine, all these things that we care about. This is going to be the biggest and best one in the world because no corporation wants to do this. No government wants to do this. Nobody, no university wants to do this because they're all funded by Big Pharma. No media organization wants to do this. It's just us. We're the only ones who understand the tech. We have enough money and we care about nutrition. Like, who else has those three things? Nobody that I know of. So that's why we're doing it. All right. Thank you for your support. All right. Now, continuing with our main news today, I want to encourage you to go to a website called thegreattaking.com. And on this website, you will find a documentary and you can watch for free. There's links to it on Rumble, YouTube, and chd.tv. I'm pretty sure somebody will post it on Brighteon soon. You can also follow the Great Taking channel on Twitter and Facebook, or you can download his book. This is from David Webb. Now, we have reached out to David Webb to invite him for an interview. So if anybody from his team is listening, look for that invitation and we would love to get you on. Now, the subhead of this documentary is, quote, central bankers have a system in place to take everything from everyone. Yeah, that's something, right? that's a big deal. It almost sounds like that would be impossible, but I assure you that what David Webb is talking about is, in fact, quite true. So I'm going to play about 3 minutes of this film for you, which is really just an extended interview with David Rogers Webb. And I want you to get the sense of what he's talking about. Now, let me set the tone. He's saying that laws have been changed in all 50 states across America that mean that even though you think you own stocks and other investment instruments, and even though you think you own your bank account, you really don't own any of these things at all. And if you have loans on your house or your automobile, you don't own those things either. Even if you think you own stocks, again, you don't actually own them. Instead, they're owned by these shell clearinghouse organizations that have been set up to take possession of everything as the great debt collapse commences. Now, you will still owe all your debts, but you will have none of your assets when this is all said and done. And David Webb is a former hedge fund manager, and he explains all of this in this film, The Great Taking. So I'm going to play this for you, give it some thought, and we'll be back on the other side.
So in 2008, I noticed the first failure of a broker-dealer. So I was expecting there to be a lot of insolvencies. I was paying attention. And the thing that shocked me was that the client accounts in this broker-dealer were encumbered in the bankruptcy estate of the broker. That never could have happened before. In all of the history of securities, they were personal property. And if the broker failed, you would say, I'm sorry, you're out of business. Here's where you can transfer my assets. That did not happen in this case. So I started digging into what could possibly have changed. And this was as serious as a heart attack, given that we were going into this meltdown at that time. That's when I discovered it had been done through changes to the Uniform Commercial Code in the United States. This had been done in all 50 states. So it was something that could be done very quietly over a long period of time and did not have to be done at the federal level, didn't draw attention. What they did was to create a new legal construct of a security entitlement. Now, prior to this, as I said, securities for 400 years were personal property. This concept of a security entitlement severed that. That's its purpose. So what people then have in institutions and pension funds, even sophisticated investors, all they have is an entitlement. It's a claim. It's a contractual claim, which is very weak in the event of insolvency. So it's an appearance of ownership. It's sometimes referred to as beneficial ownership, which sounds nice, but what it means is that you receive dividends, you receive a proxy, you are the owner of title. You can, of course, you can buy it and sell it, but you can see in documents that I've found that the legal owner is actually the entity that controls the security with a secured interest. They are the legal owners of the property. So now you have a contractual claim. Next, all of the securities are held in pooled form. So you have no specific identification. It used to be that with paper certificates, they were numbered. You had a specific numbered bond or stock share certificate. So now they're fungible. Fungible bulk, book entry form, pooled. Further, we know, and it is absolutely irrefutable from the Fed's own response to a questionnaire from the EU, that even segregated accounts, even people or institutions that have been told that their securities are segregated, are in the same pool and entitled to only a pro rata share in the event of an insolvency of the custodian. So again, segregation is just an appearance. People are told that it's an absolute subterfuge. And the shocking thing is that even sophisticated institutional investors do not understand this, or they don't want to know it.
I really encourage you to watch this documentary, The Great Taking by David Webb. Of course, the website for that is thegreattaking.com. And if you're paying attention, then you'll realize that he's talking about the creation of this new legal construct called a security entitlement. Now, what this means is that you think that you own your securities, stocks, bonds, bank accounts, whatever, debt instruments. You think you own them, but you actually don't own them. You have been displaced. You're no longer the owner. You are someone who is entitled to the benefits of this instrument, but you do not own it. Instead, the ownership is now taken over by essentially these shell corporation organizations that enjoy special protections by the United States government. So that when the system collapses, you will own nothing, which is exactly what the globalists are promising, by the way. When the banks collapse, you will own nothing. You will still owe the bank for your home, your car, business loan. They won't wipe out your debts, but they will wipe out your assets, or technically they will seize control over them. you will become just a creditor to the bank. So if you have even $1 million in the bank and you think you're a millionaire, actually, they're going to take $1 million and leave you with nothing. But if you have a loan with the bank, you still have to make payments on those loans. So you will end up with no assets, but all your debts, and you will probably be bankrupt. This is how they're going to bankrupt people all across the country, which is why it's called the Great Taking. This is a strategy that has been constructed by the financial empires to quite literally take possession of virtually all assets currently held by the people of the United States of America. And similar laws have been put in place around the world. So this is why it's critical to have assets that I call off-grid assets. They need to exist outside the banking system. Number one, it's critical to get out of debt if you can. And I know that some people out there say that debt is your friend and you should use debt to become wealthy. And the more debt you have, the more assets you control and so on. I've heard those arguments. That's not what I follow. You can, of course, decide what's appropriate for you. And perhaps if you're in real estate, maybe debt is your friend when interest rates are low. But then again, debt can quickly become your enemy as rates go higher. But I don't believe in debt. I've been debt-free for a long time, and I do not take loans, and I do not ever want to be in debt, because when you're in debt, it means they have power over you. It means they can take assets back from you. And what we're finding out in this documentary, The Great Taking, is that if you have a home that you ever had a loan on, or if you own a car that you ever had a loan on, your title, the fact that it had a lien on it at one time or another, may, under certain circumstances, allow the lenders to still claim your property as collateral during a collapse, which means that they could potentially, at least as I understand it, they could come take your house or take your car, even though you've paid it off, because they could claim that it's collateral on their books and you are just a, quote, security entitlement receiver, that you don't really own it even though you paid it off. It's still technically on their book as an asset. I mean, this is what David Webb is describing in part in this documentary. Now, I know this is going to sound completely shocking to most listeners here, especially those of you in finance and taxation and so on. You're going to say, no, that's impossible. That you might think I must be somehow missing the point on this, or I'm reaching the wrong conclusion. Well, what I'm saying is this is what David Webb is describing, and it does contradict normal financial common sense. It violates all the rules of ownership that we know. But that's the point of the documentary. David Webb is explaining that a new system has been put in place that violates all the normal rules of ownership. Even in cases of fraud, if a financial institution commits fraud and they lied and they cheated, they can still claim your assets as theirs under certain circumstances. This is what David Webb is saying. So watch that documentary to get full details. And of course, check with all your professionals, you know, your professional accountant, your professional real estate investment advisor, your professional retirement advisor, your professional dog walker, your professional whatever. If you have all these professionals, ask all of them, but do your own research, because most people who are professionals in the realm of finance and taxation do not know about this. So do your research and make up your own mind. But what I'm saying is, as a precaution, minimize your exposure to the banking system. Get out of debt. And I have always said that I do not trust assets held by other parties where I log in and they just show me, you know, numbers on a screen. Oh, look, you have this many shares of this stock. Yeah, I don't believe it. I mean, just because it's on the screen, that doesn't mean anything. What happens when your brokerage goes out of business? Well, David Webb just answered that question. When the brokerage goes under, they take all your assets. You become a creditor. So you thought you owned 1,000 shares of Apple, let's say, and in reality, you don't. Because you don't have the shares. They're not in your possession, and your name's not even on them. The brokerage, their name is on the ownership of the shares. They're the ones who own them. And so when they become insolvent, and then all their assets have to be liquidated through the bankruptcy courts, you know, you might get pennies on the dollar at that point. So I don't trust dollars in the bank. I don't trust stocks with an online broker. I don't trust even treasuries with the U.S. Treasury, you know, Treasury Direct. I don't trust any of that stuff. You know what I trust? Well, you've heard me say it time and time again. Gold and silver and land. And more recently, gold backs, as well as privacy crypto and other assets that hold value even when the system goes down. Ammunition, garden seeds, you know, diesel fuel, power tools, things like that. Those are the things that I really trust. And those are the things that I want to have in my self-custody, or at least under my direct control. If I own gold, I want to take possession of the gold, or at least know where it is, or have a way to get to it. Now, I know that's not a perfect circumstance for everybody, depending on where you live. Your gold might be safer in a vault somewhere. Or if you have a lot of silver, you might want to have it vaulted, because silver is kind of bulky and kind of heavy. That's up to you. But for me, if the system goes down, I want to have direct control over these assets. And apparently a lot of people agree with me, because almost all those assets that I've been mentioning have been going up in value in terms of dollar denominations. Gold has been trending up, and silver, and also land in many areas of the country. But I was also shocked to learn that one of the privacy cryptocurrencies that we'd covered at Decentralized TV went up almost 1,000%. And that currency is called Beam. I think their name on Twitter is Beam Privacy. But Beam, I guess it was like 2 weeks ago or somewhere around then, Beam shot up from around, I don't know, 3 cents per coin to something like almost 30 cents per coin. Now, it had settled quite a lot since then, down to about 10 cents currently. I just checked. Apparently, I missed the whole thing. And I hold some amount of Beam, by the way, and I wasn't paying attention. You know, I was focused on this AI project. But out of the blue, I happened to see Beam pricing, and I was like, whoa, that's like 300% higher now than it was a month ago. That interview, by the way, if you want to check it out, is on decentralized.tv. Just look for the interview with the founder of Beam, B-E-A-M, and you can find out about Beam, the privacy crypto. I like Monero also, by the way, as a privacy crypto, and Monero has gained value. And Bitcoin has gained a lot of value. It's gone up from, what, $28,000 a few months ago to now $41,000? And why is that? Why is Bitcoin going up? Why is Monero going up? Why is Beam suddenly, you know, skyrocketing, at least at one time? I think it's because more and more people are realizing the risks in the fiat currency financial system. I think people are dispersing their assets into more redundant vehicles. People are buying gold and silver. People are buying ammunition. And people are buying privacy crypto. And some people are buying Bitcoin as well. Oh, and by the way, last week we interviewed Gene, one of the project leaders for Epic Cash. And that interview is coming out, I don't know, probably tomorrow, I think, for Decentralized TV. Yeah, either today or tomorrow, probably tomorrow. So you can check out that interview as well. It's another privacy crypto, kind of like Beam, you know, but different. Not as big, of course, as Monero. But anyway, my point is, people are trying to reduce their risk by getting out of assets that are controlled by these central authorities that David Webb was talking about in his documentary. Anything that's under the control of federal regulators, which includes the FDIC, which controls banking, any of those assets, in my opinion, are at great risk of being confiscated during the debt reset. Now, some people call it the Great Reset. Some people call it a debt collapse. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's pretty clear to me that there's a day coming that there will be a deliberate reset of the entire financial system. And in that reset, most of the assets of most Americans will be confiscated. That's how the globalists say you will own nothing and be happy, except you won't be happy. You will own nothing, but you'll be hopping mad because they will have stolen it from you. And you'll wonder, how did they do that? Well, this is how they're doing it. This is the mechanism. They've created a legal mechanism that will stand up in court that you can't challenge. And when they flip the switch and crater the banking system, we're all going to lose everything in the bank. And I've already surrendered to that idea, in a sense, because I have to have a certain amount of operating capital, obviously, you know, to run our platforms and meet payroll and purchase raw materials and whatever. And all that money is going to vanish overnight. So I try to minimize that money. And of course, I try to have redundancy and resiliency and backup plans and stay out of debt and all these other things. But you need to be, in my opinion, you need to be thinking about what happens when they pull the plug on this system. Now, it's possible they could blame it on a cyber attack. That would be a very convenient scapegoat. Blame it on China, blame it on Russia, blame it on aliens. Who knows? Blame it on hackers. Or even, frankly, I think they could blame it on AI cyber attacks. Doesn't even have to be human anymore. They could just say, well, an AI system got loose and it hacked all the banks. And now the AI took all your money. It wasn't us. It was the AI robots. You know, they could say that. And if that showed up in the New York Times and CNN, frankly, half the country would totally believe it. Oh, AI robots stole my money. No wonder I'm broke, you know? And it's also not all fiction. It could happen. But AI robots are probably not going to come to your house and take your gold, you know? And if they tried, you could fight. You could fight back with your shotgun or something, you know? They're going to seize electronic assets. That's what's going to go bye-bye. But everything that's physical, that's under your control, well, that's very hard for them to take from you. And in my opinion, it's the people who hold the gold that are going to be able to reboot society. They're going to be the ones that own the future businesses that help launch new currencies. They're going to be the ones that are positioned as the new leaders of the entire fiscal economy after the reboot. You're going to see millionaires and billionaires become penniless, and then you're going to see people who own gold and silver and land become billionaires. I think you're going to have a big switch, you know, trading places. It's going to happen virtually overnight because who knows how much gold is going to be worth in this collapse environment. I can't even put a dollar figure on it because the dollar probably won't exist. It's infinite dollars if the dollar goes to zero, right? You know, division by zero. So we can't even properly describe what gold will be worth or silver or hard assets. But I can tell you that fiat currencies will be worth zero or near zero. And your claim on a bank that closed down, even if you had $1 million in the bank and they went bankrupt, your claim on that $1 million will be worth, you know, pennies on the dollar. It won't be worth much at all. This is why I think it's very much worth your time to look at hard assets. And let me go through the list here real quickly. A couple of sponsors that I'll mention, but also non-sponsors that I want to throw into the mix here of things that you may not have considered. Let's start with ammo, actually, because Vista Outdoor is one of the largest ammunition manufacturers in America. And Vista has put out a warning that gunpowder prices are going to go through the roof in 2024. And that's because global demand for gunpowder is also skyrocketing because of the wars. The war in the Middle East, Israel versus Palestine, as well as the war in, you know, Ukraine versus Russia and some other war areas heating up, even one in South America, it seems. But there is record global demand for gunpowder. But the gunpowder suppliers are pretty limited in what they can produce. So Vista has just announced that ammunition prices are going to skyrocket beginning in January. So right now, a lot of ammo is pretty affordable other than 5.56, which are the AR-15 rounds. Those are still very expensive. They're running about 50 cents or more at the moment. I remember when those used to be 24 cents. But a lot of other calibers are pretty affordable at the moment. For example, 300 Blackout is relatively affordable. 22 Long Rifle, pretty affordable. 9mm, not bad. And actually 308 Winchester, although it is somewhat more expensive than it used to be, it's not as bad in terms of a percentage increase as the AR-15 rounds. Higher caliber rounds can be found on sale from time to time, 300 Win Mag, and of course my favorite 338 Lapua Magnum. But some of those rounds are $5 or $6 each, by the way, so you have to really want ammo if you're spending $6 a round. Nevertheless, investing in ammunition is actually it's a pretty good call right now, because we know that ammo is going to go up. There's no question about it. It's going to get crazy. All right, gold. As you know, gold is on the table of elements. It has existed since the beginning of the cosmos, as far as we know. It's going to be here long after the fall of human civilization, or even the burning out of our sun. You know, gold will still be here, even when the sun dies down. Gold will outlast the dollar, that's for sure. Probably Bitcoin will too, come to think of it. If you want to get physical gold, do your own research. Don't take this as financial advice. Talk to experts, see if it's right for you. But if you want to get physical gold, of course, our sponsor in that space is metalswithmike.com. That's the Treasure Island coins and precious metals company. And they can get you 1 ounce coins, gold or silver. You know, very reputable, very competitive, insured, guaranteed delivery. Or they can vault them for you if you want to have vaulted silver, where they guard it and they insure it, Lloyds of London and so on. And that's not part of the banking system grid, by the way. That's a private vault that is not subject to the same confiscations as banks, by the way. You know, this private vault is not regulated by the FDIC. If you want divisible, spendable money, then check out Goldbacks, which I've talked about recently, and I've done the lab testing on them to verify the amount of gold and the purity of gold in these gold-backed bills. But you can see all my lab test results at verifiedgoldbacks.com. And that's an affiliate site. We do earn a small percentage on those goldbacks sales. But I've gone to great lengths to test goldbacks, which requires destroying them. And I've extracted the gold and I've measured the purity of the gold. And you can see all the results on that website. I've show you all the photos of the gold melting and the gold foil, everything, and the acid stone test also that we did, as well as the ICP-MS laboratory test. You can find that at verifiedgoldbacks.com. So if you're wondering, well, what should I get, gold coins or gold backs? Well, gold coins are what you get when you want gold as a bunker, where you want to save a lot of gold that you're going to trade in one day for the next currency that comes along. You know, after the collapse and rebuilding of society, you can trade in your gold for the next currency, and then you'll have a lot of that currency. Gold backs are highly divisible forms of gold, where there's a layer of gold embedded in every gold back bill. Now, it's not currency, and it's not recognized by the government, but it is physical gold in a very unique shape with amazing art, and it's divisible. So it's as small as 1/1,000th of an ounce. Those are the ones, or you can get 5/1,000ths or 10s, 25s, and 50s. And the 50s are larger and heavier and pretty thick, because there's 50/1,000ths of an ounce of gold in there. And I verified that. I confirmed it. So goldbacks are divisible, spendable gold, whereas it's very difficult to take a gold coin and shave off 1/1,000th of it, you know, that's actually very tricky. Or to carry around little tiny scales and try to measure milligrams of gold, you know, that's difficult. But with gold backs, you can just whip out the gold backs here. You know, here's a 10, here's a 5, here's a couple of ones. And now you know exactly how much gold you have, how many thousandths of an ounce. That's what makes gold backs really great. They're more expensive than gold coins in terms of what you pay per ounce of gold, but they have much higher utility value. So there is a utility premium, obviously. It costs money to print these gold backs. But anyway, you can check those out again at verifiedgoldbacks.com. Some people like silver. Some people like junk silver, you know, spendable U.S. minted coins, quarters typically, or dimes. A lot of people have those. And yeah, those have high utility as well. But if you want to store a lot of value in junk silver, it gets pretty bulky pretty quickly, kind of heavy, and takes up a lot of space. Not as easy to store as something like gold backs. Now, I also want to mention power tools. I know I've mentioned this a couple times before, and this is not a sponsor, but Milwaukee branded power tools, that's the brand that I have personally settled on. I've tried Makita brand. I've tried DeWalt. To me, the DeWalt power tools are just kind of junk. Makita is very expensive, not as much variety, and the batteries aren't as good. But Milwaukee, from all the tests that I've done, Milwaukee is the brand to go with. Now, what's great about Milwaukee tools and batteries as barter items? Because they work off-grid. That's why. And I'm talking about their cordless tools. They have two different batteries. They have an M12 battery, which is a 12 volt, and an M18 battery, which is 18 volts, of course. And then they have hundreds of tools that operate on these two batteries, either the 12 volt or the 18 volt. Everything from blowers and saws and jigsaws and screwdrivers and impact wrenches and, I don't know, everything you can imagine. Lights and radios and generators and tire inflators. In fact, the tire inflator that I carry in my truck is a Milwaukee M18 inflator, and it's the best thing out there. I think I own 4 or 5 inflators, and most of them are junk, but the Milwaukee is really, really great. But here's why these are so valuable in an off-grid situation. Number one, Milwaukee batteries are kind of like currency. You can trade batteries, especially if they're new in the packaging, by the way. You could trade them like currency because, well, people need to get things done, especially in a collapse. And power tools present a way to do that that can be charged by solar. So a lot of people have small solar setups, and they might have a solar charging station, or sometimes it's called a solar generator. And if you have a solar generator and some panels, then you can charge Milwaukee batteries from the sun. Even in a grid down situation, you can charge power tools. And then those power tools can be, you know, drills or saws or whatever that's necessary to do maintenance and do construction and build shelters and all these things that matter, especially in a collapse scenario. So I think that power tools are going to be very valuable in that scenario. Of course, water filters will as well, and maybe hand tools, certainly firearms, things like that. But don't forget about power tools. I know that as someone who lives out in the country, I could not function really without Milwaukee power tools. I use them all the time. I use them for plumbing. I have their PEX pipe tools, these expansion tools, for example. I have their battery powered ratchets. I have their blowers and all kinds of things. And I've really found them to be quite essential to all the tasks that I need to get done. And as a prepper myself, as you know, sometimes I'm accused of over-prepping, but in my truck, I have an equipment set that goes with me everywhere. And what I've done recently is I've taken a high-capacity M18 Milwaukee battery and put it in there with my inflator, but also a compact impact wrench. You know, the kind of impact wrench that takes lug nuts off your truck tires. And then I have a lug nut socket set in there as well. So I have one battery, but it can power either one of those tools. So if I have a flat tire emergency, then not only can I easily change the tire with the impact wrench, but I can also reinflate tires with the inflator. And maybe I don't have to change the tire. Oh, I also carry tire plugs, of course. So there could be a scenario where the tire just has run over a nail and it's going flat. I can pull over, I can pull the nail out, I can use the tire plug kit, ream out that hole, put in the tire plug patch, which has sticky glue on it, and reinflate it with the inflator, and back on the road, back in business. Because I don't call AAA, by the way. I don't even have AAA. I don't call 911 when I have a flat tire. I fix the tire and get on down the road. The point is, these kinds of tools, in my opinion, are really valuable barter items, and I think you should consider these as part of the things that you're acquiring. Now, don't forget garden seeds. We do have a partnership with ARC Seed Kits, and we have their seeds now available at healthrangerstore.com. So if you go to our online store and just search for seed kits or ARC, A-R-K, ARC Seed Kits, you'll see the seed kits that we have there. But bottom line, and I hope that most of you listening, you probably have at least a little bit in each of these categories. You probably have some amount of gold and silver. Maybe you even have some of the gold backs. You probably have some amount of garden seeds. And you probably have a generator and maybe some tools and maybe some fuel that you've stored, you know, things like that. If you've done these things, you are so much better off than the average person out there, especially if you also have stored food with this. Stored food, it's the universal currency. I should have mentioned that up front, obviously, but everybody has to eat. And food is very valuable in an emergency. And of course, iodine is very valuable in a nuclear emergency. But if you've got even a little bit of these things, a little bit of ammo, you know, you've got your 9mm pistol, and you've got some kind of a rifle, and you've got these other things, you are in great shape compared to most people. And especially if you don't have much debt or you're completely out of debt, that would be ideal. Then you are bound to do so much better during this great collapse. The people that are going to get completely reamed in this situation are people who have more debt than assets and people who trust the system blindly. So they have all their money in the bank, or they have all their investments in a brokerage account that they access online, and they trust that thing. And they trust the FDIC, and they trust the Treasury, and they trust the dollar, just like they probably trusted the vaccines. You know, they probably trusted election integrity in 2020. These are gullible people. If they trusted vaccines, you know, some of them are already dead. If they trust the dollar fiat currency, many of them will end up being financially dead. If you trust the system, you're a fool. And you know that, listening to this. The people who have done well, even after COVID, are people who said no to the vaccines, but people who said yes to nutritional preparedness. Taking zinc, for example, and looking at vitamin D and, you know, vitamin C and quercetin and all kinds of nutrients and, you know, healthy eating. Those are the people who did well. Well, nutritional preparedness is parallel to financial preparedness. The people who will do well in the financial pandemic, you might say, are those who have financial preparedness tools, which is all the things that hold value off-grid from the banking system. Again, gold, silver, privacy crypto, gold backs, junk silver coins, you know, all these things we've been talking about here today. So double check your supplies of these items, do what's right for you, think ahead about what's coming, and also consider this news right here. There are 5 container ship companies now that have said they will no longer handle shipments that go through the Red Sea, which is where the Suez Canal connects to. The Suez Canal, of course, going through Egypt, connecting the Red Sea to the Mediterranean. And Maersk, which is one of the largest, I think the second largest shipping company in the world, Maersk, says, nope, we're not going to take the risk. In fact, I predicted all this a couple of weeks ago. Remember when I said that the insurance companies are going to yank their coverage of ships that sail through the Red Sea? And once the insurance companies say, we won't insure you, well, then the shipping lines are going to have to stop shipping because they can't run a ship through there taking 100% of the risk. The value of the cargo is just so immense. They need insurance in order to run this. So Maersk says, we're done. We're no longer going to ship containers through the Red Sea. No more Suez Canal. This means that they're going to have to go around, you know, instead of taking the shortcut through the canal, they're going to have to go around like the southern tip of Africa. And I think that adds 2 to 3 weeks, something like that, to the duration of the shipping time. So something needs to go from, let's say, Qatar to, let's say, Britain. It's going to take weeks now, like 3 weeks longer than it would have. And what's that going to do? It's going to crater global supply chains. So MSC is the largest container shipping company in the world, and they've also said they're stopping all shipments through the Red Sea. CMA CGM also says they're stopping. COSCO is stopping. And Hapag-Lloyd is also stopping. So these five companies are all saying we're done. No more shipments through the Red Sea. So you are going to see supply chain problems like you've never seen before. And then we have an article on naturalnews.com. Here it is. Supply chain chaos. Key global electrical products supplier announces 20-week delay for many components. This is from Schneider Electric. And you've seen the name Schneider. If you have any electric components in your home, in your circuit breaker box, in your water pump control device, you know, Schneider. They're very well known in electric components. So they are now 20 weeks out for all of their engineered to order components. Those are called their ETA components. These are essential to public and private infrastructure. They're necessary to keep the power grid online. So now if something goes down in the power grid, you know, like a power substation has problems and starts to fail, and they need replacement components from Schneider. Guess what? 20 weeks out now. That's a 5-month delay, folks. And that was announced even before the shipping companies announced that they're no longer shipping through the Red Sea. So you can see this is going to get just completely bonkers here. This is going to get crazy. We're going to have COVID-like disruptions of the global supply chain hitting us very soon, you know, and throughout 2024. Not just gunpowder, like I said, you're going to have a hard time finding ammo. You're going to have a hard time getting spare parts. And if they pull this debt reset collapse, then that's going to be obviously, you know, a game changer for everybody in a very negative way. So I think the theme for 2023 should be prepare for the worst here. I mean, yes, hope for the best, but prepare for the worst because it's not looking good of what they're trying to roll out on us. Now, we're going to go to the interview here next, but I do want to mention that I'm not doing any interviews during Christmas week. I'm going to be working on the AI system for most of that time, not Christmas Day. I think I'll take Christmas Day off, but the rest of the week, I'm plugging away on our large language model project, and I'll probably resume interviews the first week of January. So I just want to prepare you. No interviews, and I'm not even sure how many podcasts I'll have for Christmas week. I know I'll do updates here and there, but not as many as usual because I'm going to be neck deep in all this research. I'm so thankful that my background allowed me to learn how to write code, and I'm very familiar with SQL queries and relational database queries and things like that, because I'm finding that I have to use all those skills again now, having to learn Python, which turns out to be incredibly easy as a programming language, and then using new database managers, which also turns out to be incredibly easy once you understand the fundamentals of SQL. But man, if I didn't have all that experience from, I don't know, 20 years ago, I would not know how to work this AI project at all. But, you know, God puts us on a path. Sometimes we don't know why. And he shows us different things and different challenges and gives us different skills and different learning experiences. And sometimes it all kind of coalesces in a way that makes sense. And you go, aha, that's why God put me on this path, you know, to get to this point so we could do this thing that's important for this reason. And that's the way I feel it's working right now. So I think it's really interesting that on Christmas week, a holiday rooted in Christ, that God has shown me the reason for all the different kinds of experience I had in the past and why that's critical for the protection and archiving of human knowledge on nutrition and healing foods in 2024. It's amazing. It's all coming together. It's like, wow, I didn't see the plan until now, but God had a plan, and God has a plan for each and every one of us. So if you do anything over the next few days, see if you can gain any more clarity on what God's plan is for you. What are you supposed to be doing with your focus, your time, your mental gifts? What does God want you to do with your life? And I think to the extent that you follow that, you will find satisfaction and fulfillment. To live a life with purpose is to live a life well lived. And I feel very blessed to have your support as I pursue these very important projects that I believe God approves of. We'll just put it that way. So thank you for everything that you're doing to help me pursue this. And with that said, here's the interview with Anthony Rubin from muckraker.com, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. We have a very special guest in studio, Anthony Rubin from muckraker.com, who just survived quite a trek from Quito, Ecuador to the U.S. southern border and has been able to document the invasion routes of the United States that are being used by illegals from all over the world. Welcome to the show, Anthony. And I'm glad that you're alive and safe after everything that you went through.
It's great. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, it's good to be here. I remember, you know, actually, you were one of the first people other than Michael Yame, but that I said on our last interview that I told about going to Quito, Ecuador, the plan to do that. And I'm glad that we're here now kind of closing that loop.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, this is great. So kind of walk us through it. You flew to Quito.
Yeah.
And then you joined the migration routes, or what did you do?
Yeah. So I guess for everybody watching this at home, the whole mass migration route pipeline to the United States, it starts as far south as Quito, Ecuador. Actually, it starts further south than that. I mean, there's actually routes going through like Peru. You know, there's actually maps down there of Peru. They've carved out these quote unquote migration routes.
Really?
Actually, like, honestly, it's like all of South America has like been carved up like that. And the UN has actually put out maps, I'm pretty sure, for almost every country in South America showing migration routes through them. But Quito, Ecuador, the country of Ecuador, is the main starting point for anybody that's not already based in South America. And the reason why is because they have literally the world's easiest entry requirements.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've got the port city of Guayaquil on the west. And I know they get a lot of traffic from Asia coming in on Guayaquil. And then from Quito, all you have to do is grab a bus and start heading north, right?
That's it. And so we landed in Quito, and, you know, we actually didn't even spend a lot of time there. We spent one night, and then we kept it going, just because, I mean, it was a long, we were trying to hustle through this journey, and even hustling through, it took us a month, literally a month exactly, from October 15th to November 15th. And that was us like hustling ass. So
no, wait, well, hold a second. Couple of questions up front.
Yeah.
Number one, do you speak some Espanol?
Sí, poco.
Okay. Enough to get by.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Me too. Enough to get by.
Yeah.
But not going to be writing college papers in Espanol.
Exactly.
Okay. Second question. How did you not get robbed if you had cash on you?
I mean, you know what? This might sound silly. People might roll their eyes when I say this, but I truly believe you could read a lot about a person just like up front before you even say anything to them. You know what I mean? Just like looking at a person's eyes, assessing the situation. If they're sketchy, I mean, you don't go around sketch balls. You don't go around sketchy areas, and you just kind of watch where you're at. I also think that having my brother with me, because I was originally going to go alone, and then my brother insisted, he's like,
Yeah, probably not a great idea.
He's like, I'm going with you. Honestly, in hindsight, had I gone alone, I don't even know if I would have done all the things that I did, but had I done the things that I did without my brother, there's a very high chance I probably would have been disappeared. And I'm not just saying that. Like, I truly believe that.
Yeah.
I just would have been disappeared and not heard from again. You know, it's exponentially harder to disappear two people at once than just one man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and you have a lot of maps that you brought to kind of show us some of the routes, but talk to us about where you went from Quito, all the countries that you went through, and how this worked.
Sure. So that brings me to my first map, actually. So we took a bus from Quito to the border town of Tolkien. It's right on the border with Colombia. And you get there, and literally, I mean, we could display this. They hand out these maps there. And this map is basically like a treasure map. Every single NGO that you could imagine that has to do with this illegal alien pipeline is listed on this map. And they're all just littered throughout this town.
That's just a town map.
It's just a town map. Yeah. But, you know, it shows all the different NGOs that have to do with this mass migration pipeline.
Whoa. Yeah. So what do? You go to one of these buildings, and what do they do?
There's all different types of aid that is handed out here. Legal aid, medical aid. You know, other places that actually hand out instructions and food packages and whatnot, and then they send you on your merry way. This is printed by UNHCR. I mean, this is directly printed by the UN. This is handed out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The UN is 100% all into mass human migration.
100%.
So then how did you cross the border to Colombia?
So we did that legally just because I didn't see much intel to be gained by doing it illegally. And, you know, I mean, you could easily get jumped. I mean, you're just trekking.
Yeah.
You know, the crazy thing is that border crossing there. I mean, you lived in Ecuador. Did you ever do that border crossing?
No, I never crossed the border to Colombia.
It's like you don't even necessarily have to get your passport stamped. I mean, you could just walk across and it's like voluntary if you want to go get it stamped, which I was pretty shocked by. I was like, what's going on here? But no, we just went across that land crossing right there and went right into Colombia after we saw this. There were other things. I mean, for example, this is handed out by a group called R4V. This is the this is a quote-unquote migration route map that's handed out. And like I said, so this R4V, they've also carved up. I've seen that they have maps of Peru down there as well.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, you could see how explicitly obvious what's going on here is, right? How they're just encouraging people to not only migrate to the United States, they're also encouraging people from Venezuela. R4V stands for like refugees for Venezuela.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah. And so they're actually encouraging not only people to go up to the US, but Venezuelans to actually use Ecuador not only as a resting point, but like a final resting place, a final destination, but also as a transit area to go further south to countries like Peru.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what this is all about. Just basically, when you're looking at this, what you should be thinking of, it's not just the dissolving of the United States of America, it's just the dissolving of sovereign nation states.
Right. Just trying to turn it all into a giant free for all.
Exactly.
With no borders.
Exactly. That's what this all about.
Well, that's one of the chants. What was it? Like no borders, no walls, no USA at all.
At all.
Right?
Exactly. Yep. That's...
Now, I'm curious, the people that you met along the way,
yep.
What were their stories or their justifications for why they were making this trek to the United States? I mean, I can understand in Venezuela, just trying to get away from the tyranny and the poverty, but you must have met people from all kinds of different countries. What were their stories?
It's honestly, I don't want to minimize or diminish anybody's personal, plight, right? But it's all kind of the same stuff, honestly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're headed to the United States because Biden's opened the border and, we're looking for a better life in America. That's just what you hear. I mean, like,
imagine their surprise when they get to Biden's America and they realize, it kind of sucks.
Yeah, well,
in a lot of cities, Democrat cities where they're going.
It does, but it also shows you there's that much residual greatness left in this country that people still want to come up here. I mean, these countries are that bad. I mean, these countries are hellholes, man. And I don't even like saying that because it sounds like I'm not, you sound uncultured when you say something like that, but they are. I mean, truly, I would want to live there temporarily. I'm so happy to come back to the United States.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I'm
very happy to be living in Texas.
Oh, my God. I love this country. Yeah. I've traveled around, I'd say, a fair deal more than most people. I lived in Southeast Asia for a year, traveled around there, like India, Cambodia, Thailand, Laos, and now this whole trip coming up here. I mean, the United States of America, I'm always happy to be back here. So there's that much greatness left despite the collapse we're going through.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can turn that around. We'll see. But next question, how many Chinese did you see on this route? Because we know that the CCP, I mean, Michael Yan has done a lot of reporting on this. But the CCP sends, military age males to Ecuador to begin this journey and then through the Darien Gap and so on. Did you notice a lot of sort of Asian ethnic people?
Yeah, to say I noticed it is an understatement. That was the majority of people that were coming through. The majority of people that I saw, as far as like, you know, illegal aliens headed to the United States, I'd say the biggest demographic was Chinese.
No kidding.
Yep. Before we crossed the gap, after we crossed the gap, then I started running to, you know, a lot more Latinos. But before then it was, yeah, majority Chinese.
Did you speak to some of those Chinese people?
Yep. Yeah, I did.
What did they tell you?
So the ones, well, I interviewed one man for, actually two men. I've only published one of the interviews though. And they both admitted to me on camera, for example, that there are Chinese police in America. We already know that. It's not like a big, this isn't like groundbreaking news, but I guess just to hear it, from their mouth, you know what I mean? Just these Chinese illegal aliens that are admitting to me openly that, yeah, there's Chinese police in America.
Wait a minute, when you say Chinese police in America, you mean CCP-run police stations? Or correct. Are you referring to something else?
No, that's exactly what I'm referring okay. to. Like, so like the police that would be, you know, operating out of these CCP police stations that they busted in New York, right. Los Angeles, and other cities.
Right.
Yeah.
And just for our viewers, those CCP-run police stations, they enforce the CCP's goals on Chinese Americans. They can threaten you or your family back in China if you speak out against China in America. I mean, they run around and threaten and probably, you know, murder people.
I'm sure of it. As a matter of fact, what kind of kicked this whole thing off was this past summer I was given, so I had met an illegal alien during my first Darien Gap trip back in spring of 2023. And I stayed in touch with this man and he eventually got into the United States. He's living in Los Angeles now. And one day he knows that I'm researching this stuff. He knows that I'm a journalist that, you know, investigates this. And one day he just, you know, drops me a 200 page PDF document and it's all written in Chinese. And so I get the first like 20 pages translated. I'm looking at the translation and it's literally a step-by-step manual on how to go from Quito, Ecuador, all the way to the United States border. People can go to my website and check this out.
Right.
I mean, this video barely got any publicity at all. I was shocked. And then I get the rest of it translated, and it's basically an instruction how-to manual on how to work the asylum system in America. And so, you know, bringing us back to what you were saying, I actually interviewed this man for that video, blurred out his face, of course, upon his request, but he told me again that he, like, feared that the Chinese police, if they discovered who he was, would come and kidnap him back to China, straight up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's interesting, because another question I have for you is, did you ever encounter anyone who you thought or maybe admitted that they were dispatched by the CCP in order to occupy the United States? Because Michael Yan believes that he caught on camera a CCP soldier or intelligence agent, basically, who was doing that to get to America.
I believe that's Lucian Zhao. That was my footage. I know exactly the footage you're talking about. Yeah, the one where we're sitting at the table and it's...
Sitting at the table. I call him Mr. Scratchy.
Mr. Scratchy, yeah.
He was all like scratch. I mean, the jungles are brutal.
Yeah.
But he was all scratchy and denying everything.
Yeah, no, he was getting real pissed off at me, man. I had that camera running. We got a lot of it and then he realized what was going on and then he made us turn it off. But
yeah,
Chai Ninja, as we call him. He, that's another example. And I'm sure you know all the background that Michael Yan did on him and discovered.
Yes.
Yeah. Some serious stuff. I mean, he had tried taking a boat from the Bahamas into the United States, got caught, got shipped back to the Bahamas. And then instead of going back to China, actually had enough money to then like repurpose his whole mission and go, you know, to Colombia and try it all over again. I mean, where's he getting this money from?
Well, that's the question. I mean, and where are his loyalties?
Right.
You know, is he waiting for instructions from Beijing at some point?
I'm sure most of these people are. Even then, I mean, coercion is a very powerful tool and it will be used, of course. And so, if you're asking me that question, no, I can't speak of anybody that I spoke to where it's like definitively, yes, this person is being sent. But I mean, we could put two and two together. We know that the CCP is operating here definitively. It's not a conspiracy theory, right? I mean, that's what people will try to tell you, that it's some sort of right-wing conspiracy. That's actually what they say. It's nuts.
Well, they just don't know what's actually happening.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't even entertain that. Yeah. We know that's happening. We know that all these Chinese are coming out in here, many military age, many of them firing off weapons in the desert weeks after getting here and brazen about it, posting. I'm not even sure. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not even sure if they're legally allowed to do that as non-citizens, if they're allowed to get a hold of weapons and go fire them off in the desert like that. Like, I'm not sure if that's even being done legally, but the point is, there's plenty of videos like that. I publish them. Lawrence Sellin has published a ton of them. Great investigator when it comes to this. And they're out there just firing off weapons literally a week after being in the United States. And they're brazen about it, publishing on social media. I almost feel like, again, I can't prove this, but I almost feel like it's like signaling back home, like showing, right. you know, whoever they may be working with, like, yeah, we made it look here. We're fulfilling the mission.
Right. I mean, we occupied the enemy's territory. We yep. got guns and we're training with their guns in their deserts inside their borders. I mean, it's like a conquering message. Like
yep.
we're here and we've taken over.
Yeah. That's quite literally what's going on. And yeah. we're just allowing it to take place. And it's not just the Chinese though. You know, I mean, I encountered military age men, a giant group of them from Syria, extremely sketchy. I mean, we could get into that. Sketchy, not because they were from Syria, but because, you know, their body language and the way they came dressed up. They, for example, you know, okay.
Was it the suicide vest?
The suicide
was that a trigger?
No, that came later.
Oh, okay.
What was interesting about these men, maybe more, not quite interesting, that's not the right word, frightening maybe?
Down.
About these guys.
My dog's getting really interested in your talk here.
Well, he should be concerned, yeah. honestly.
He's running border security right here in the studio at the moment. But no, keep going. I'm sorry.
Well, no, you're good. So, I mean, what was concerning about these Syrian guys? The point is this. So these Syrian military age men, when we were going into the gap, we took a route that's used by SIA, Special Interest Aliens. And, you know, I could explain it right here. So this is a map of basically the Darien Gap. This is actually handed out by HIAS. They like to deny that they have anything to do with this, that they encourage people to go through the jungle. But you could literally see, I don't know if the cameras could pick that up, but there's literal boat routes that you can see here, taking you across from Nakokli or Turbo. On this side, you have to take a boat over to the mouth of the gap, which is right here. Literally showing this to you on a map. Okay, but they're going to deny that that exists. But that's not the route that we took. Had we gone from one of these entry points here from Colombia into Panama, there's a very high likelihood we would have been killed in there.
Yeah.
Straight up. I mean, there's drug runners going through there. These are the
absolutely.
Routes. Yeah. People.
You know, get raped in there.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe even as a man. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, dead bodies everywhere. People getting raped. Stories of even, you know, young children getting raped. We didn't take that route. The route that we took was we took a boat over somewhere around here to this like coastal village called Coreto.
So you got the first class seats.
Correct.
I mean, you had to pay for the boat.
Yeah, we
a lot of people don't have the money, yeah. so they go through the jungle.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so the route that we took is used by special interest aliens that have more money because, of course, you have to pay a boatman smuggler to take you in there.
Right.
And so it's quite interesting. Actually, it's a better route. It maybe not as adventurous, but it's actually still quite dangerous. Like, I don't want to minimize that. I mean, there's still armed men taking you through there. You can't trust these people.
No.
You know, I mean, you have to trust them, actually, but, you know, you shouldn't. You trust them as little as you need to. But the route that we took further north, where you actually end up trekking basically east to west onto Highway 1 instead of south to north. And what was interesting about that is used by SIA. So the caravan that we left with was predominantly, it was about 400 to 500 people, I want to say, and it was mostly Chinese.
No kidding.
60% to 70% Chinese, probably about 65% Chinese.
How many of those Chinese spoke Espanol, by the way?
I mean, any guess? I don't think any.
Really?
Not that I encountered.
Did some speak English?
Yeah. Yeah, enough speak English.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that you could get by with, you know?
I see.
But it wasn't just them. There was also Syrians that were there, a group of military-age Syrian men, not one woman or not one child with them.
Wow.
Straight up. And these men were incredibly suspect, to put it lightly.
Yeah.
They get off of this boat, because everybody gets smuggled onto boat, and I got this on video, so I'll be publishing this, but they all show up on boat like at the crack of dawn. And these guys get off, and they're all wearing crucifix necklaces. Every single one of these men had a crucifix necklace on.
The Syrian men?
The Syrian men, right.
What does that mean to Syrian men?
Well, I mean, there are Christians in Syria. Yes. It's a rarity, but yes. they do exist. To me, I took it as cover. It seemed so blatant, I took it as cover.
Right, but there are Christians being persecuted in Syria.
There are.
And that they might be trying to flee Syria for that reason.
Possible. That's why I'm giving all the evidence I have and let the audience come to whatever conclusion they want to based off of that.
Right.
But that wasn't the only thing. Some of these men had tattoos that read Jesus. It was all in the same font, and the tattoos looked new. Okay, you could tell.
Oh, really?
Yep, you could tell an old tattoo, a decade-old one from a new one. I mean, it looked fresh.
Yeah.
Again, anecdotal, I get that. But again, I'm just giving people the evidence. Do with it what you will. These men were somewhat friendly towards me until I told them that I was American and they realized that I had a camera in my bag, at which point they became incredibly hostile towards me, like scary level of hostile.
Yeah,
I didn't want to go anywhere near them. I mean, it was so hostile to the point where when we were going into the jungle, I kept saying to my brother, have you seen these Syrian men? Like, because I didn't want to run into them. I was like trying to keep my distance. But again, another clue, we didn't run into the Syrian men because as you know, as it went, these men actually took a completely separate route than us.
Oh.
An entirely separate detached route. What does that mean? I mean, it can mean any number of things. Maybe they want to avoid detection. Maybe they there's a reason they don't want to be around this mass caravan. Maybe something's going on in the jungle that we don't know about. I have no idea. I can't prove that. But again,
maybe they had more money to pay a better smuggler for a better route.
Maybe.
A VIP smuggling route.
It could be any, like it could possibly be any one of those or all of the above. We don't know.
Right.
But again, these are all just clues showing that something suspect is afoot. Right.
Well, it's also highly suspicious that they were all military age men, no women and no children, at least the group that you saw. Mm-hmm. And we have from other intel sources, some of which I've interviewed here, that they know that there are a large number of Middle Eastern terror minded individuals that are making their way into the United States through this process.
Yeah.
And that there are weapons already staged in the U.S. to be used for domestic terrorism, bombing infrastructure, things like that. I'm not accusing, you know, the people that you saw, but perhaps that's what's going on.
Listen, stuff like, I mean, terror attacks are 100% coming. To think that there aren't bad actors that are already in here, or just even if they're not terrorists that want to blow up a residential building or something, or an office building. I mean, even just saboteurs who want to take out a power plant. I mean, this is definitively going to happen, and they're going to blame it. I mean, we've already seen all the pre-programming. What was that? I forget the name of that Obama-funded movie that just came out that's literally talking about the power grid coming down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. People. Ethan Hawke and Julia Roberts are in that movie. I was just watching part of it. It's like the end of the world is coming or something. I forgot the name.
Yeah, it's total pre-programming as far as I could tell.
Absolutely. It's also, there's an anti-white narrative in the movie, too.
Frightening.
Yeah.
And they literally say that, like, when this all happens, don't trust the white people, something along those lines.
Right, they were saying don't trust white people.
Yeah, I put it more lightly than they actually put in the movie, I think. I think it was actually said worse than that.
Yeah, but just for the record, Ethan Hawke plays a snowflake father slash husband who doesn't know how to use firearms, who doesn't know anything about prepping, who gets lost driving on the road.
Oh, my God.
So that's not Texas, just to be clear. All the men I know in Texas can take care of themselves.
Yeah, I mean, that is New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco. That's a lot of people, and a lot of honestly good people that are going to be caught up in this, and they're going to be doomed, honestly.
Yeah, there are going to be a lot of doomed people who don't know what to do.
Yeah.
When the power goes out, yeah.
Very, very sad.
That's not us, though. That's for sure. Oh, now, I'm sorry to interrupt, but at one point you were kidnapped.
Correct.
You were taken hostage. You were blindfolded.
Yep.
Tell us about that event. That must have scared the shit out of you.
I will tell people about that, but before I even get to that, I feel like I should tell people about the different cartels that we experienced before we even got to that point. If we got time, because
do we have time? Are we okay? You good? Okay, you want to hear this? Okay.
So
I want to hear it too. Yeah.
Okay. So, basically, Mexico is a controlled state. I mean, the whole state is controlled by criminal elements. You could pull up maps that just show the territorial control of these different cartel organizations. I mean, I'd rather be in the jungle than certain parts of Mexico that I was in.
I don't blame you. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
I'm not just saying that. So let me just...
Yeah, even when I was in Ecuador, I liked the rural areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cities... I mean, the Ecuadorian people are awesome people, but the sketchy elements are in the cities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like where they operate out.
Whereas like the rural people are like farmers, like, oh, you want to trade a chicken, you know, it's all good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I encountered, as far as I'm concerned, three cartel organizations. They may have been three distinct organizations, although I cannot confirm the second and the first. I'm just going off of the evidence that I have. So when we got smuggled into Mexico, that happened by who I believe was the Sinaloa cartel. We met with the Ministry of the Interior in Guatemala before we crossed into Mexico. And they said that the area that we were going to cross from Tacunaman into Mexico is controlled by Sinaloa. And I mean, that was an incredibly dangerous experience. I mean, I could have straight up been kidnapped right there. We were held in a stash house. We were packed into a clown car with like, you know, just like men sitting on top of each other, military age men from Sierra Leone. And we were driven down these dirt roads into the interior of Mexico. I thought they were going to pull over the car because at one point, you know, they're like driving and stopping in a dirt road, driving again. I was worried for them, getting ready for them to just stop the car and just rob us.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. We got through it.
Yeah, it could have happened.
Could have happened there.
Yeah.
Could have happened when we rode the train of death. I mean, the men that wrote that loaded us onto the train of death.
You should have brought him with you.
He could have
come in handy.
I probably should have. It would have been even exponentially harder to kidnap us. So that was the first cartel group that we ran into. We could have been kidnapped right there. Second group we ran into, I don't know what cartel group this was, but it was certainly a cartel group, was the one that loaded us onto the train of death. Okay.
It's actually called the train of death.
Yeah, El Tren de Muerte.
Oh my God.
Or the beast train. That's like, we could do a whole 40-minute segment on that. Extremely dangerous. I had to ride it twice because after the cartel took all my footage,
yeah,
I flew back into Mexico to ride it again to get that footage back.
I remember the footage of you on the train
reporting,
but you're saying that was the second version.
That was the first version. And honestly, as weird as it sounds, riding on top of the train is the least sketchy way to do it because the second time I rode in the inside of the train, packed in a boxcar, and they locked the doors from the outside. It was horrifying.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it was horrifying.
You're kidding me.
Oh, straight up, man. Straight up. But that's a different story. But anyway, the men who loaded us onto that train the first time.
You're like cargo.
Yeah.
Yeah,
human
seriously.
Cargo, man.
I mean,
that's what it is. And so the men who loaded us onto that train the first time, you ever seen the Batman movie from the early 2000s, that the guys who trained Batman from the League of Shadows, right? And he's up in the mountains, and these League of Shadows guys are training him. And that's literally anybody at home that wants to look this up. That's what these guys looked like. And I say that because, like, that's the best descriptor I could give people. They looked like members of the League of Shadows.
Wow.
They were wearing all black with body armor, and they had a sword tucked behind in their back in their body armor. And they were holding AR-15s or shotguns. I just learned this from Alex Jones. You brought up a good point. He said, "You know why they were holding swords? It's to kill you without making a sound."
Yeah,
I didn't even realize that. I had no idea. Yeah. I was like, "Why would you have a sword if you have a gun? Like, what is that?"
Yeah,
chop you up. Nobody will even know. Right. Anyway, those men loaded us onto that train. Whatever cartel group that was, no way to prove who it was, but it was a cartel group.
How much did the train fare cost you?
For free.
For free. That was free.
Yeah, but they were facilitating the whole thing. And then if you take it to its definitive, this is a train map. I mean, this is handed out.
Show us the train map.
This is handed out by an NGO called Amigos del Tren. Okay.
Friends of the Train. Okay. So the you were on the green route or the blue?
Let's see. We would have been on the, that's correct. We would have been on the green route. Yep. We left from Irapuato. And, you know, it's supposed to take you all the way up to Torreon, and then you could keep going upwards, or you could start, you know, you could go eastwards.
How long were you on this train?
About 12 hours. Yeah, we decided to get out. I mean, we figured we got all the intel we needed. But my point is, if you take it to its definitive end, everybody I talked to, they told me that, you know, if you take it all the way, at the very end, it's those same men. You're picked up by the cartel, and they take you to the border. And if you can't pay, because then that's when you pay. You pay when you get to the border, you get across. And if you can't pay, I mean, they will extort you and do whatever else to get that money. They're not, you know, but that's whose hands you will be in. So I'm grateful that I didn't take it all the way to its end.
Wow. This may seem like an odd question, but what about food and water and restrooms and things like that on this train? I mean,
you just pack it all with you. Pack it all with you. And I guess use the bathroom off the side of the train. Yeah. That's what's going on.
Did you do that?
Did I? Yeah. Yeah, I did. I was actually coming down with salmonella and E. coli when I wrote it the first time. It was absolute hell, man. I mean, luckily I was able to keep it together for the time I was on that train, but it was brutal.
Man,
I can't imagine
being worst.
You need
to take chlorine dioxide with you next time you decide to do that. The little tablets.
You mean like for the water?
Yeah, you can purify the water, and it also kills all kinds of bugs.
I did that. I actually did exactly that. I filtered it out with Katadyn water pump, high level water pump and water filter. And then I hit it with exactly what you're talking about, those little water purification tablets.
Oh, okay.
And no, I still came down with something. I don't know. I don't even think I got it from that filtered water necessarily. It could have been from just some weird food. Who knows?
Yeah, or ice. It's often an ice.
There you go.
Yeah, you're drinking an ice beverage, but the ice is made with the contaminated water. That's what I learned living in South America.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that honestly could have been it. But anyway, that was the second cartel group. The third cartel group was the Gulf Cartel. We were picked up. Long story short, really, I mean, you know, I could spend an hour talking about what happened, every little detail, but what happened was we were going to cross into Mexico right across from Elon Musk's SpaceX, right there in the Gulf of Mexico,
right.
Boca Chica, Texas. On the Mexican side, it's called Boca del Rio Bravo, and we basically what happened was we got dropped off at Playa Baghdad. That's basically the last like road that you could take a car before you have to just get out and walk the coastline all the way up. We're walking the coastline. And for two reasons, really, that I decided to cross at this particular point. Number one was I figure, okay, we're going to cross here and show that, you know, right across, right near Elon Musk's SpaceX, a critical spaceport, billion-dollar rockets they're launching off, that you could just cross the border and enter the United States.
Yeah.
There would be good publicity. That was number one, just to prove a point. And number two, I figured if there's any area that's going to be remotely secure, it'll probably be there. Like, for the same reasons, right? For the same reason.
You would think.
Yeah. For the same reason that it would be good publicity, it'll probably be secure. It's not secure. And I later found out the reason why we got picked up was because they were running drugs back and forth. I literally heard that from a cartel member because I got in touch with them trying to get my footage back. Whole other story. Anyway.
So wait a minute. They were nervous that you were a journalist with cameras while they were running drugs on the same route. Is that
what happened?
The story?
Exactly. What happened was, so I'll explain the kidnapping and I'll explain that. So what happened was, we basically, long story short, got kidnapped, got picked up by some dudes in a truck. They basically told us, listen, if you're going to keep walking down this beach, you got to get in our truck. And like, you don't really have a choice. And I was like, I don't want to get in your truck. I'm good. I'm going to keep walking. And then they go, okay, well, I'm calling my friend who's down there at the end of that beach. Like, I have to. Really, I should have listened to him in the beginning. But hindsight's 20/20, of course.
Yeah.
But had I listened to him, because they offered, they said, get in our truck. We're going to take you back to where you came from. It's going to be all good. Just forget this ever happened. I didn't listen to him. I should have. But, you know,
yeah.
that alone is sketchy, you know.
Well, yeah, but you didn't know what's happening.
Of course. There. Yeah. So yeah. With the benefit of hindsight, I should have taken it. But in the moment, I'm like, I'm not getting your car, dude. But, you know, he says, okay, I'm calling my friend who's down there by the border. Calls up his friend. He says, okay, listen, you really have no choice now. You have to get in my car, because if you walk down there, it's not going to be good for you. I go, oh, okay. Like, I guess I'm getting your truck, dude. Convinces me that he doesn't have any weapons. Shows me his glove compartment. It's empty. I'm like, all right, fine. We get in. I'm getting in with my brother. I'm not alone. Just with my brother. We start driving down. Now, at this point, we're literally a couple hundred feet from the U.S. border. I can't see the river just because of the decline, you know, the geographic decline. Like, it's on a, you know, suppressed a bit. But I'm looking at, like, it's the river's right there. And I could see Elon Musk, SpaceX, right in front of me, like, blinking. Like, there it is. And this man that they had called on the phone gets in the car. And as soon as this guy got in the car and I could see who he was like, oh, this is not a guy I want to be. Like, this is getting bad. Like,
yeah.
This situation's solely not in my control. They whip the car around. They start driving back down south. Now it's getting worse. The whole time I'm telling them, say, listen, I'm just a photographer. I'm trying to take pictures of SpaceX. I'm not telling them I'm trying to cross the border. Of course, because that's like basically spitting in their face. Like, yeah, man, I'm just trying to cross the border. So I'm telling them this. And then
you want pictures of SpaceX from the Mexico side.
It's just my cover. I'm acting like I'm a photographer. I'm just a tourist. I don't really know what I'm doing. Right.
Yeah.
And, they whip the car around. They start driving down south. This man who got in the car gets on the phone with the woman. They start rambling in Spanish. I don't really know what they're saying. Puts me on the phone with her. And the lady says, listen, I don't know like what you're doing, but you're supposed to pay $500 to cross in this area. I didn't say I was trying to cross. They just inferred that. And she says, she mattered like bluntly. She wasn't like trying to tell me I was going to be a kid. Just bluntly. She's like, you're in the hands of the cartel. You didn't pay them. So and now you are being taken by them. You're going to be handed off to a group of armed men. Just tells me this just flat out. And the truck that took us, by the way, was a truck with Texas plates, which is kind of interesting. It shows that they're operating between countries, obviously.
Yeah.
But then we drive back down the beach, pull up next to this other truck. Three armed men get out and just order us into this other truck. Men armed with assault rifles, straight up like AK-47 variants.
Wait, did they expect you to have $500 of cash on you at that moment to pay them?
Oh, at that moment, we're beyond the payment of cash. I thought we were going to be able to do that. I was like, oh, hey, well, cool. This might be even better. Like, we'll just pay $500 and we'll get smuggled in. No, we were beyond that. At that point, we were being taken.
I see.
Yeah. So these armed men, three armed dudes, get out of this truck, order us into their truck, right? So now we're switching vehicles. And actually, in that car, I started videotaping the dudes who were driving that truck, the cartel guys who were driving that truck. Had they caught me doing that, I may have been killed. Or had they caught us with drugs, we would have been killed. Or had they caught us with a weapon, we probably would have been killed.
Oh, for sure.
Straight up.
Yeah.
But anyway, we drive about 10 minutes inland. We unpack our bags. And they see our camera gear. And they see the drone. And they start flipping out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they start bugging. They're like, what is going on here? Then they start searching through all of our data. They search through my phone. And I'm worried this whole time. Like, they're going to find that video that I took of them. And I don't even know what they're going to do. But I guess, I just don't think he saw it. I don't think he saw, because I had my USB plugged in that had the drone footage. Maybe he was focusing on that. I don't know. But anyway, they put us on our knees, take hostage type photos. They accuse us of being intelligence or military guys. They're checking us for wires, going through every bit of our bag.
Right. Like, you can never go there again.
I never will.
You know that.
I never need to.
Yeah.
Believe me.
Especially after being all over alternative media now.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know what? They can keep Matamoros for themselves. I'd never want to go back. That's totally cool. It's their territory. I'm good with it. But anyways, so long story short, I'm trying to negotiate with these guys. Failed negotiations. They end up tying up our hands. They throw a blindfold on me. They didn't have one for my brother, so they just pull the hood over his head of this jacket that he was wearing, throw us in the back of the truck, and basically say, you know, like, you're part of an investigation. We're going to see El Jefe. And
No, you don't want to see El Jefe.
That's exactly what I said.
That's always bad.
I don't want to see El Jefe. And the entire time, I'm like, guys, what are we doing here? I'm like, how much money do you want? So just tell me how much money you want. We'll go to the ATM. I'll pay. They wouldn't have it. And they were just like, no, like, investigación El Jefe, straight up.
Oh, man.
They wouldn't let me go.
That's bad.
Bad.
Yeah.
And I was telling my brother, I was like, listen, man, I apologized to my brother. I was like, dude, because I felt I was the leader of this thing. I was like, I'm so sorry, man. But I was like, listen, while we're in the truck, because we had our bags on our lap. And so I had my hand kind of hidden behind the bag. I was telling him, I was like, dude, start getting your hands ready to go. Like, get it loose to the point where you could slip that thing out. And I mean, I did at least. My brother was afraid to, because the cartel guy was sitting right next to him. He was like, dude, I'm not doing that. But I had some space. It was like myself, my brother, cartel dude, and the two cartel guys on the front. So I got my hand to the point where I like got it up on my knuckles, and then I slipped it back down. I was like, okay, I could slip this off. I need, not that I was going to be able to do anything. They're going to put a bullet in my
head. But just in case.
Just in case. You never know.
Yeah.
Never know. Anyway, long story short, man, we drive around making different stops. They're hotboxing the car, you know, smoking weed in there, making stops. Dudes coming up to the car, whispering about us, talking if we're intelligence or military, and they keep driving. Eventually, the doors fling open. They pull us out. They start screaming at us. And we're literally in the middle of an abandoned field. I will give you the snapshot that Michael Yon took, because we had an Apple AirTag, and you could see literally exactly where we were at in the middle of that abandoned field. So everybody could...
Was this still in Mexico?
This is still in Mexico.
Yeah.
Doors fling open. I'm thinking, why are we in the middle of an abandoned field? Like, they are going to kill us.
Yeah.
Straight up. And
hand you a shovel.
Yeah.
Start digging. Yeah.
But that's not what happened. They lined up all of our electronic gear. They start screaming at us because they didn't believe that they had all of it, which they actually didn't. They didn't capture my GoPro, and I wasn't going to give it to them. So I made off with that footage. Thank God. That was actually the most valuable footage of us getting smuggled by Sinaloa cartel. I'll never do that again. And so they didn't get that footage. So like that's like the silver lining in all this. All the other footage I was able to recapture. And they take a crowbar, and they smash every single piece of gear we have other than the drone.
Wow.
And then they let us go. I mean, they load us into another car with another cartel member, and they drop us off at the port of entry. Basically tell us not to come back ever again.
Which is probably good advice.
I don't want to go back.
Wow. So you are very lucky to be alive after that, I would say.
Yeah, like had I been a different person, like I don't smoke marijuana, I don't use drugs, there was no reason for me to carry a weapon, but if for whatever reason I did have something like that on me, it was probably a dead man. Like these, you know, you could also tell, what I want to say is this, because this is not about me. I always like try to say, like, it's not about me being kidnapped. It's a cool story, I guess. And I'll tell it on a date, or I'll tell it at the Thanksgiving table in 10 years when they say, hey, Anthony, tell us about that time with the Gulf cartel. But that's not the point. The point is that there are literal narco terrorists that are controlling our border. And if they're controlling it right across from SpaceX, man, what the hell are they moving in the remote deserts over by Arizona? I mean, they could literally be moving nuclear weapons across.
Well, they have moved surface-to-air missiles across, SAMs, by the way.
Definitively.
Absolutely. No, I have that from another source. The U.S. State Department was freaking out about that a few months back. They couldn't find them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, SAMs. I mean, they can take down commercial airliners. And those are hidden somewhere in this country right now, and the State Department doesn't know where they are.
Oh, my God.
Not to mention the dirty bomb, radioisotope, explosive suicide vests that have also made it across into America.
It could be anything. I mean, honestly, like sky's the limit. Whatever you could bring across a border has likely come across. And so that's really my point when I say this is that, I guess two things. Number one, if this area, by the way, so let me say this because this, I want to tie it all together. So after this was done, I wanted to get my footage back because I was like, I don't want to go to Mexico, ride the train of death again and find another caravan because like, you know, it's just like, I just don't want to have to deal with that all again. It's too dangerous. But that's actually what ended up happening was I actually got in touch with the Gulf cartel through Facebook. And
really?
Yep. They're literally Google. Just Google, you know, Cartel del Golfo, Matamoros, Facebook. And you will see these men. They're brazen. I mean.
Wow. They're
just
not hiding. They have Facebook accounts.
Yeah.
I'm banned on Facebook.
Really?
But if I were part of a Mexican cartel, I could have a Facebook page.
Exactly. If you talk about ivermectin, you're going to get banned. But they actually have human smuggling groups for the Darien Gap on there, too.
By the way, I'm just curious. I don't mean any disrespect, but when you found out the name of the train was El Tren de Muerte, mm-hmm. And then you're like, I'm going to go on that train. Shouldn't that have been like,
well, it wasn't
a,
even
a little
the train.
Hesitant.
You know, the train wasn't what got us in trouble. I mean, the train.
No,
we
I know,
good.
But it's called the train of death.
Yeah.
And it's like,
well, shouldn't we have?
You're a brave guy, is all I'm saying.
I mean, listen, the way I see it, it's risk reward, right? That's what it is. I mean, I'm not going to take a risk. Honestly, there's a lot of risks that people take that I would never take. You know, to me, this like I would never go skydiving. That to me seems foolish. I'm jumping out of a plane. Maybe the parachute doesn't open. Why have I done this?
I would much rather jump out of a plane than ride the train of death.
Really?
Yes.
You see, that's where we differ.
Yeah.
To me, it's like if I'm going to risk my life, at least let me get some intel doing it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You know,
you're right. You did get some amazing intel. But what you learned, though, is that this is a whole industry.
A whole industry.
And that the U.S. is doing nothing to protect its border,
nothing,
essentially.
Nothing at all. And
extraordinary.
My point is really this, though, right? So the number one is if that area by Elon Musk SpaceX is controlled by... So let me just finish this point.
Yeah.
I got in touch with these cartel guys, and I tried to get my footage back. I was trying to broker a deal for the memory cards, right? And I didn't end up where... Everybody at home, if your footage ever gets taken by the Gulf cartel or any cartel, just let it go. You're not going to get it back. You're going to waste a bunch of money in the process trying to get it back. But I learned some interesting things, which was what? So I found a cartel guy who found the people that took me. And I know that definitively that he found it because he basically told me what happened to me. He said, are you the Americans that had all their footage or their camera gear smashed and they took you to the bridge? I was like, yeah, that was me. He was like, oh. He's like, the reason why they did that to you is because they were actually moving drugs back and forth at that time. And they thought you were spying on them. So the point is, I've had this told to me, okay? So this
right.
isn't like, this isn't me guessing that that's what they're doing. They're definitively doing that right by there. They can be moving anything across the desert where there's almost no, you know, border patrol or anybody surveilling that area. Okay, fine. And the last thing I want to say on this point is that these are not just, I mean, these are narco-terrorists. And when I say terrorists, I don't say that lightly, like somebody on CNN calling all white people domestic terrorists. I mean, these are literally people that chop off enemy cartel members' heads with no mercy. I mean... Or rape women. Rape women and hang the underwear on border fence. That's been reported before. That's almost like a trophy for that. I mean, these are the people you're dealing with, literal terrorist organizations that are controlling our southern border, and we send billions of dollars to defeat terrorists abroad because they look scary and they're wearing turbans in the middle of the desert. I mean, it's the most insane thing that you've ever seen, but that's what's going on, man.
Okay. Wow. I mean, first of all, I want to say... You have a lot of balls, man. I mean, to have done this and to have documented it and to come back and share this story, you know, you should be testifying before Congress on this. I mean, every member of Congress should be hearing your story of what you saw. And also they should be paying attention to Michael Yon and Vandersteel and others that are reporting this. In wrapping up this interview here today, and I really want to thank you for stopping by. This is extraordinary. What would you say to those people who are watching? Because we have a lot of people who watch, a lot of influence out there. To those who are watching who are involved, a lot of people work in the government. Mm-hmm. They're involved in policy. They're involved in law enforcement. We have a lot of guys that are part of, you know, Texas Rangers, for example, and so on, that watch this show. What would you say to them that's the biggest takeaway from your experience?
All I can say is that we're being invaded, and I don't say that lightly. I'm not trying to...
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, we are literally being invaded. It fits the definition of an invasion. What's the definition of an invasion? It's an incursion by a large group of people into a sphere or place of activity. I mean, that's what this is, right? It's all being quarterbacked by the United Nations. There's nothing humanitarian about this. I've already talked to you about the different cartel groups that I've seen and things we didn't even get into. And you have the UN that's funneling these people into the hands of the cartel that then is profiting untold amounts of billions off of this whole enterprise, smuggling them in here. So then you have to say, okay, we realize then, based off of all this evidence and the things I've told you, there's nothing humanitarian about it. So why are they letting these people in? And the reason why they're letting these people in is because it's literally a replacement population. It's a third world underclass that could then be controlled and manipulate it any which way for political purposes. And we've already seen, for example, Senator Dick Durbin this past week talked about making these people soldiers in our military and giving them citizenship after we deploy them.
Wow.
Couple that now with, I'm just trying to give people the big picture as best as I can, couple all of this now with the constant demonization, ridiculous demonization of white people, literally pre-genocidal talk that you hear coming out of the mouth of these people, saying that we're all domestic terror, that all white people are domestic terrorists and white supremacists. I mean, how do you handle a terrorist? How do you, I mean, you load them up and put them in camps and get rid of them. That's what you do to terrorists. And they're saying that white people, the biggest terrorist threat facing our nation is white supremacy. Terrorist threat. And this is something that Joe Biden continues to say. He said it within the last few months again, I think at a college graduation, nonstop with this pre-programming, pre-genocidal talk. You couple that with this now third world underclass that could be weaponized against us. And you're left with an extremely scary picture. So, I mean, anybody that thinks that they're just going to go along with this and that it's going to end well for them, I mean, it's truly not. And if it does, if you end up living past this and we don't turn the ship around and you live past, you know, how this is going to play out, I don't think it's a society you want to live in. It sounds like a very miserable world to me. So that's all I could say, you know, if you give a damn. But I think, unfortunately, a lot of people actually think they're going to go along with this. So I'm going to be part of it once it's all done, which I think is incredibly foolish.
No, you're going to be replaced. Your assets are going to be seized and handed over to the replacement crew.
That's exactly right.
And the American people are going to find themselves penniless and homeless and powerless in their own country if they don't protect their border.
That's exactly right. And yeah. I don't know if we're past the point of no return. There's already 10 million of them in here, you know. And now they're trying to mask it all with the CBP One app, basically bringing them through legal, like some legal channel. It's the same thing, but basically they don't cross over the border. And so you can't really photograph that. They just cross through a legal port of entry. Or they're actually flying them in now too. So it's still going on, but they're just trying to reduce all the media exposure because of people like me and others who go down to the border and expose it. But that's what this is. It is a premeditated invasion of the United States. It's happening right under your nose, and we've exposed that today.
Yeah, and finally, I mean, this is not... I don't hear from you that you're anti-immigration across the board. You're anti-illegal immigration, you know? I mean, I'm married to an immigrant, a legal immigrant, and there are a lot of great legal immigrants who do, they believe in the U.S. Constitution and they contribute to America, but you're talking about the criminal element, the child traffickers, the weapons traffickers, the drug traffickers, the occupiers, that they just want to destroy America. They don't want to be part of America.
I'm glad you're saying that because I don't want to leave any room, although I've already said enough that people could pull out snippets. If somebody wants to demonize you, misrepresent you, they can. But to anybody that's watching this, I want to make sure that I can't, end to end, I want to make sure that I can't be misrepresented. Exactly what you said, I got nothing against even these people just on a human level, them coming up here. I mean, they're being weaponized and they're being used as pawns. And now I do, of course, have something against the saboteurs and possible terrorists that are coming to
our border.
Of course. But, you know, the poor Venezuelan mother who's coming up here with their child, I'm a human. Like, I can understand
that. Yeah,
they're
being used by globalist forces to invade America.
Yeah.
And they're just pawns, like you said.
Exactly. And I got nothing against. One of my best friends is an immigrant from South Africa, adds a tremendous amount of value to this country. And you know what's actually ironic? That man adds so much value, employs people in this country, and the hoops that he has to jump through just to stay here.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, if you're a Venezuelan who came up here, or a Chinese person who came through our southern border illegally, you know, you're given almost indefinite stay.
It's yes.
A perversion of the law.
And all kinds of benefits as well.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, Anthony, this is extraordinary. Your website is muckraker.com. Right. And just give us a quick description. What can people find on your website?
I mean, listen, it's really just a small operation, myself, my brother, mostly southern border stuff. If you guys want to see me confronting Antifa and, you know, having run-ins with them or going into crack tents on Skid Row, you can find that on there as well. But really, the point of my operation is to try to save what's left of the American Republic. And, you know, right now, like I said, it's just me and my brother. Over the years to come, we will expand this operation, mark my words, and cover a lot more than just this. And but that's it. That's what you can find on my website for now. Stay tuned. You could catch me on most social media platforms at Real Muckraker. And that's all I got to say, man. We're in this together and not going down without a fight.
Okay. Well, thank you, Anthony. And we're really glad that you're here, that you're safe. And what you've exposed is truly historic. So thank you for your work.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for watching, everybody. Feel free to repost this interview on other platforms. And thank you for supporting this platform, Brightown.com, free speech platform. As you can tell, this is an uncensored interview. In fact, I think the only time we cut this is when my dog jumped up here. But other than that, it's completely uncensored. So thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams. Take care. If you'd like to support your own health and longevity while also supporting this platform, check out the products we have back in stock now at healthrangerstore.com. We've got super anthocyanins, which is it's an incredible combination of aronia berries, and it's got blueberries, and you know how the dark purple pigments in plants, these have special properties, and that they're called anthocyanins. And you can find them in things like purple carrots or eggplant or purple corn. Well, we've captured those anthocyanins and put them in this format. It's a delicious way to add these very potent nutrients to any smoothie or recipe. And yes, they're very, very purple. So that's available now at healthrangerstore.com. We also have Greens Plus Superfood. You see on top there, that contains spirulina and various organic grass juices as well. Of course, all in powdered form. If you want to add greens to your diet in a convenient format, this is an easy way to do it. It goes into smoothies. You could use it in some recipes as well, but I think smoothies are the easier place to use it. As with all the products that we offer at healthrangerstore.com, these are also subjected to our rigorous laboratory testing, which includes heavy metals testing, lead, cadmium, mercury, and arsenic. And it also includes E. coli and salmonella testing. That's in our microbiology lab, as well as glyphosate testing. That's on our triple quad mass spec that does herbicide analysis. And of course, soon we're adding dioxin testing to this as well. So you can trust that these are clean, laboratory tested, certified organic products that are honestly labeled and honestly priced while offering tremendous nutritional value that can help support and enhance your good health. At the same time, you're benefiting this platform and keeping us on the air so we can continue to bring you uncensored interviews, podcasts, and content that helps enrich and enhance the lives of millions of people all over the world. Thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of HealthRangerStore.com.